Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Yachin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Is it a Fruit Tuesday or just a regular Tuesday? Right,
We don't do fruit. We don't do Fruit Tuesdays anymore.
No Fruit Tuesdays anymore?
I'm doing a Fruit Tuesday.
Sarah is eating fruit.
We've got some blackberries up in here.
Fruit Tuesday.
Well, okay,
go.
In my lunch bag, I've got a banana and four cutie oranges. So.
Wow.
So it is a Fruit
it
Tuesday.
It is a Fruit
it
Tuesday.
Is. There
but,
you go.
But
I was on top of that.
Did you bring fruits?
I had some strawberries.
You had some strawberries?
Before, yeah.
All right, let's complete the quadfecta. That's probably not a word.
Jordan doesn't eat fruit.
No, I stay away from that healthy stuff. I do have a cherry Coke, if that counts.
That's what's up.
There you go.
That's what.
On this Fruit Tuesday afternoon.
Fruit-flavored fruit by the foot counts. Gushers count. Fruit snacks count.
How long did we do that Fruit Tuesday shtick? Was it?
Not forever, but probably a month.
No, yeah. It had to be longer than a month.
Really?
I think it was
longer than a month.
2 or 3 months.
And
then,
really?
And then after, no? Oh, Jordan,
I was,
give me that.
My initial reaction was about a month.
Was about a month?
Did it just feel like 3 months for you, Burnsy?
No, it didn't. All. I think it felt like 3 months for Gambo, because I think he's the one who's like, all right, can it just be a Tuesday now? Can we please be done with the Fruit Tuesday thing already? We get it. You thought it was Friday. You said Tuesday. It came out Fruit Tuesday. Can we just move on now?
It was funny.
Yeah.
We liked it.
It was funny. My voice cracked a couple of weeks ago, which, by the way, it's all back.
Voice is back?
It's fine now.
Okay,
yeah, I had that little thing that I did a couple of weeks ago, but we're all good now.
So you got Tuesday down and you got your voice down.
I know what day it is. Yeah. And
amazing.
All we need to do is fix Madison Bumgarner. Weigh in on our top story
good
of the day here on
that.
The Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in.
Chapman is singled and fly to left, and he swings here and hammers one over the wall and left. A home run. It's 6-2, Oakland.
Man, it's not very good. I got to give us a lot better chance than I have been doing.
Yeah.
Hey, we sucked again.
What do you do? I mean, let's cut right to the quick. What do you do?
You keep rolling him out there every fifth day until he figures out how to pitch. And you suffer in the meantime. I mean, you suffer. I mean, Madison Bumgarner is terrible. He's awful. His ERA went up. How does your ERA go up when it was 11?
You pointed that out in the email today, and I hadn't noticed that.
His ERA went higher.
That's a really good catch by you. I'm like, oh, my God, it did. His ERA went up.
Up.
It was 11, and now it's 11.20.
I mean, he didn't make it out of the fifth inning. They had to pull him with 98 pitches. 6 runs allowed, 7 hits, 3 walks. I'll tell you what, Nick Ahmed saved his ass, too, because Nick Ahmed made an unbelievable play with runners on second and third and nobody out in the second. I never seen him jump so high in my life, and he turned a double play. So instead of two more runs scoring, you know, they got a double play and they kind of got out of it. But like,
the pitch is a line drive. It's caught by Ahmed. Back to second. And they got him. Double play.
Great play.
What a play by Nick Ahmed. That's a big double play.
I mean, it could have been. He could have gave up 8 runs, 9 runs. I mean, he was just so bad again. First inning, leadoff double, stolen base, scores on the ground. Third inning, a walk, single, 2-run double. Fifth inning, 1-out walk, single. Error by him on a pickoff, sack fly, home run, hits a batter, take him out of the game, send him to the showers. I mean, this is getting tiresome, man. This is old. I know you want to wait, and I get it, but, I mean, he's had 3 starts. None of them are good. They're all awful. They're not even mediocre. I mean, give me a mediocre start.
Yeah.
Give me a mediocre start.
Well, and you know what? It's funny. He was trending towards a mediocre start last night, wasn't he? Until things got sideways on him in the fifth, I thought he was trending towards a mediocre start where he was giving up a lot of loud contact. He was getting up a lot of hits, a lot of traffic, a lot of base runners, all of that stuff. And then in the fourth, and by the way, Oakland just hit a solo home run off of Zach Gallen. His pitch count is now at 62, but the Diamondbacks are still winning 5-1. That just happened a moment ago. He had a quiet 1-2-3 fourth, if memory served.
Yeah.
Right? And so if he could have just finished the fifth with a 1-2-3, then at least that would have qualified in that moment as a mediocre start, right? Because he would have gone five innings. He would have given up three runs. It would have been okay, right? And then things got so sideways, so bad. And, man, I tell you, that errant throw he had to Eduardo Escobar,
that
undid everything for him. I mean, you could just see it. He was so pissed about that, and he couldn't unwind that, you know, because then he gives up the sac fly, then he gives up the home run, which was a bomb, then he hits the guy, and that's it. It's done. You went from a potentially mediocre start out of Mad Bum, which you would have taken every day that ends in Y, to another very bad Mad Bum start.
22 hits and 12 walks in 13 and two-thirds innings. Let's put that in perspective. He's put 34 guys on base in 13 innings.
Yeah.
34. In 13 innings.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? Like honestly, like, that's almost three batters an inning are getting on base against them. Like, sure. That's incredible. And I didn't even say the hit batter. So that would be 35, 22 hits, 12 walks, a hit by pitch. That's 35 batters on base in 13 innings. Like, that doesn't happen in the major leagues.
No wonder his ERA is 11.5, right?
It doesn't happen. No. Like, nobody does that.
No, it isn't. So,
so what do you do? I don't know. You throw him out there. And I don't know. There's got to be a cutoff, right? There has to be a throw him on the injured list. Or, I mean, you can't trade him. You're not going to cut him with all the money you owe him. You're going to try to continue to work with them to get him right. But he's the worst pitcher on this staff.
Oh, yeah.
He's the worst pitcher they have.
Yep.
There's not a starting pitcher worse than him.
No, and how frustrating that must be for the other eight guys that are out there to know that your starting pitcher, as vaunted as his name might be and as historic as he might be in recent baseball history, is not giving you a chance to win a baseball game. How frustrating that's got to
be,
right?
You got to win a game tomorrow. Who's your number one pitcher?
Zach Allen.
Who's your number two pitcher?
Probably Luke Weaver at this point.
Okay, number three?
Merrill Kelly.
Four?
Whoever's occupying the fourth spot right
now. And then five.
And then it's Mad Bum.
That's what I'm saying.
Of course, yeah.
He's the last guy you would pick to win a baseball game right now. The last guy.
But again, I'm going to circle back to the question that I led the segment with. What are you going to do about it if you're the Diamond?
What are you prepared to do?
You say to me that I want to wait. I mean, the only reason I want to wait is because it doesn't feel like you have much of a choice right now.
Because you're right. I mean, but you're right.
What else are you supposed to do? What else are you supposed to do but wait and throw him out there every 5 days and hope that he starts giving you some mediocre, because you ask.
I say it with frustration.
Yeah.
I say it with frustration. Like, what are you supposed to do? Like, this isn't fair. This isn't right. This guy's making $20 million. He can't get anybody out. Like, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And you're stuck.
You're stuck.
Like, if this was anybody else, he wouldn't get another start. Can we say, is that true?
If this was
anybody else,
he would be bumped from the rotation and they would try something else.
Except for Zach Allen, because
rotation.
He's working back. But I mean, if you have three outings that are absolutely this pathetic, they're going to find somebody. If this was Riley Smith, if this was, Corbin, if this was Martin, if it was anybody else, you're probably like, okay, you got to go.
Vinny said something earlier, and it's incredible. I mean, it's not incredible that he's right, because he's more often right than he is wrong, but I hadn't really framed it up this way. Who is generally considered, pitching-wise, to be the biggest waste of money the Diamondbacks ever spent?
Russ Ortiz.
On? Okay, that is the correct answer. Russ Ortiz. Madison Bumgarner has made 12 starts as a member of the Diamondbacks, all right? 12 starts over a year and a month. His ERA is sitting at, there it is, 7.64. You know what Russ Ortiz's ERA was through his first 12 starts of his Diamondbacks career?
I know he signed a five-year, $33 million contract.
Two runs less. Russ Ortiz, highly acknowledged as
give
the
me
biggest,
Russ Ortiz right now.
Russ Ortiz's ERA through his first 12 starts as a Diamondback was 5.62. Mad Bum's is 7.64. And that's my point, is that Madison Bumgarner is quickly, very, very quickly, starting to gain admittance into a club that nobody wants to be a part of. The, oh my God, how much money did we give that guy club? Russ Ortiz is in it. Eric Burns is in it. Yasmani Tomas is in it. They didn't give him a lot of money, but they gave up a lot to get Richie Sexton, so you could argue that he's in it, right? That all-time pantheon of guys that you just made massive financial or prospect-based mistakes on, Madison Bumgarner is this close to being in that club already after 12 starts. You don't think Diamondback executives last night were thinking during that game, oh, my God, what have we done?
What have we done?
What have we done?
I mean, if you're the owner of the team, aren't you thinking the same thing? Like, what did you do?
Well, what have we done?
We just got out of a massive contract, and I got another one here?
That's all I could think about when I was watching last night's game. That, in fact, I just felt bad for the guy because he's obviously so frustrated. What have you done, Arizona Diamondbacks? Because you can't undo this. This is toothpaste you cannot put back in the tube. And you ask the question, how many more? I think it's got to be three or four more. And if you don't see even mediocrity out of Mad Bum, he's going to go to the IL. And they're going to give him some time off to try to figure out what's wrong. That's my guess.
Okay.
Three or four more starts like this, and it's off to the IL to figure out what's wrong.
2006 was when the Diamondbacks finally gave up on Russ Ortiz.
Okay.
They didn't want him anymore. They ate $22 million in 2006. Okay? It was 15 years ago. They cut him. $22 million. He was, at the time, believed to be the most expensive player to be cut loose in baseball history, in the history of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
They designated him for assignment. They ate $22 million out of $33 million on the contract.
For context, this year Madison Bumgarner is making $19 million. Next year Madison Bumgarner is making $23 million. Next year Madison Bumgarner is making $23 million. And the year after that, Madison Bumgarner is making $14 million.
I'm not saying you cut him now, but I'm saying that, like, if next year at this time, if he's, you're going to have to cut him. You're going to have to. Like, you can't, I'm not saying you cut the guy now.
Yeah.
Okay. I know you want me to, but I'm not going to say cut Madison Bumgarner.
No. I'm not trying to bait you into that. I was actually processing some information that Jordan gave me a second ago.
I just did the inflation calculator. $22 million in 2006 would be almost $29 million today.
So not even close to what you owe Madison Bumgarner. Not even close to what you owe.
Oh, my God. They caught him. He was 0-5 with an ERA of 7.54. What if Madison Bumgarner is 0-5 with an ERA of... Well, if he's 0-5 with an ERA of 7.54, he's actually pitched better. Because his ERA is 11.5.
You're right.
It would come down four runs.
You're right. When we come back.
Holy moly. This disaster that he is.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, the Phoenix Suns, they did it again. Looking dominant in the first half of last night's game against the Rockets. And it was a second half that had Monty a little upset with how his team performed last night. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo show.
Booker gives it to Crowder. Crowder's three. Shazam! It's his eighth, and that's a new record. That's the most three-pointers he's ever had in a game, and we're still at the half.
At some point last night, I thought, okay, this is the game it's okay to turn off in the third quarter, right? This is the game where it's okay to pay more attention to the Arizona Diamondbacks. This is the game where, my goodness, the 24-point lead, 23 at halftime. I think they led by as many as 21 or 22 in the second half. And there it goes again. That was a 5-point game with about 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
I think they're so good they get ahead of these teams and then they get bored and they just lose their intensity. I really do.
I think
they get bored and lose their intensity. I have no other way to explain it.
That's a very good diagnosis. I really do. They get bored. They get sloppy. They get kind of lazy, right? They just sort of, we're so much better than the Rockets. We'll go out here and just kind of wing it and see what happens. And they do. I think you are spot on.
I mean, it was raining threes in that second quarter. He's getting a three. He gets a three. And he gets, everybody got a three. Jay Crowder hit a three after three after three. Javon Carter, back-to-back threes. It's 51-36. Dario hits a three. Jay hits a three. Mikhail hits a three. Paul hits a three. Crowder hits two more threes. Like, I never seen anything like it. They were unbelievable. They were up by 24 points. They made 18 out of 24 three-pointers in the first half. They scored 81 points, and they went to halftime, and they got bored.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Either that or they shared, like, 10 pizza pies. it's one or the other. They got bored, or they ate a lot of pizza. I mean, maybe when you're up by that much, you're like, hey, give me a couple slices. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't have a logical explanation for why they allow teams like this to get back into the games. No, I don't have one.
I think your explanation is as good as any that's plausible that's out there
right
now. They're bored. They're just, okay, yeah, this is no challenge for us. We're officially bored. Now, what changed last night? Okay, the Suns, first of all, the Suns won. They beat the Rockets. They held on. They won by 6. The Jazz, shockingly, lost at home to the Washington Wizards.
Take that.
You take that because now you're game and a half back of the Utah Jazz.
Is it one in the loss column?
I believe it's one in the loss column now. So you're knocking on Utah. So that ended a 24-game home win streak for the Utah Jazz last night. So you got that. You've everything ended up being good. And in the past, Monty Williams has been – remember we played the two different sound bites for James Jones and we said, hey, which
– yes.
You got to pick one. Are you team Monty
or Chris Paul?
Or are you team Chris Paul? Because Monty had said, hey, man, I don't care how pretty it is. As long as we win, that's all that matters to me. And Chris Paul's like, we got to stop doing this. And this was like 3 weeks ago when we did that. Last night after the game, Monty changed his tune. Last night, after the game is like, man, we won, but this is just got to stop.
We love getting wins. We'll never, ever lose sight of how important it is to win a game. But that was not the standard of consistency and level of play that we expect around here. Defensively, we gave up 62 points in the second half. And in the second half, we scored 45 points. You know, the approach to today was not at the level that it's got to be for us to be the team that we need to be. And so, yeah, we hit some threes, but we gave a team confidence when we could have put them away. And as happy as I am about the win, I understand this league a lot. And we just have to be better in those moments when you have a chance to put a team away. We just didn't do that well tonight.
I'm thrilled to hear it. And I think what he sees is the end of the season coming near. And, okay, we haven't fixed this issue. We just have not fixed this issue of building these big leads and letting these teams come back into the game. Because even if you look at it, right, they were up by 24 at one point, okay, because they were just killing it in the second quarter, hitting all the threes. Fourth quarter opens. Cam Johnson hits a three-pointer. The Suns go into the fourth quarter up by 15. Cam Johnson hits a three-pointer. They're up by 18. Cameron Payne hits a three-pointer. They're up by 19. 109-90.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you know, they've got the ball with a chance to cut it to 4. The Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
You had a 19-point lead, and then they've got the ball down 7 with a chance to cut it to 4. They knocked down a 3. It's a 4-point game. They just started hitting shots. Brooks was hitting shots. They weren't defending him very well.
No.
Wilson had a 3-point play. Porter Jr. I mean, I think one of the big salvages for the Suns was in that fourth quarter. They started to give the ball to DeAndre. Mikhail gave it to him. Paul gave it to him. Book gave it to him. Then they got some easy baskets. And then Paul gave it to him again for that tomahawk dunk. You had 4 big baskets by DeAndre Ayton when the Suns weren't making any of their shots.
No, I mean, Booker was okay in the fourth quarter, too. He only took a couple shots, but he made one of them. Outside of Ayton, mostly Ayton and a little bit of Booker. I mean, Chris Paul in that fourth quarter? And look, Chris Paul's been phenomenal this year. He was 0-5 in that fourth quarter. All right, he was struggling to make shots down the stretch of that game. There's this window.
They can't turn it back on, can
they? There's this window for the Suns, and it usually comes about 2 minutes left in the third quarter to about 6 minutes left in the game. Okay, so 2 minutes left in the third quarter to about halfway through the fourth.
That's a lot of the bench, by the way.
That's their window to end it. That's their window to snuff out any, and that's where always these teams find within that window, within that, you're right, that the bench, it's Chris Paul on the bench. That little window is where it seems like a lot of these leads go from 18 down to 12, 19 down to 9. And before you know it, what should have been an off fourth quarter for Devin Booker, a fourth quarter off for Chris Paul, turns into a Booker's got to play 34 minutes, and oh, by the way, you got the Miami Heat tonight. Chris Paul had to play 27 minutes, and oh, by the way, you got the Miami Heat tonight. DeAndre Ayton had to play 31 minutes, and oh, by the way, you got the Miami Heat tonight. If you play better just in that little 6 to 7 minute game clock window, then Devin Booker never has to see the floor in the fourth. Chris Paul never has to see the floor.
There's no reason
in the fourth.
Up 19 at home against a bad team like that those guys should have to come back in and play.
Nope.
There's just no reason.
None.
Cameron Payne hits the three-pointer. You're up by 19 with about 10 minutes left. And that game's got to be over. I mean, it's just got to be over. It's a 19-point lead. And the fact that they were able to cut that lead and get close, it was like, oh, my goodness. What? At one point, they had it to five. It was 114-109. That's what they cut it to. They cut it to five. Wilson had a three-point play, and it was a five-point lead with 5:45 left. And, like, how is this a five? How did you just lose 14 points off your lead that quickly?
Yep.
In 4 minutes.
It's been happening all year, and maybe Monty saying something means it will stop happening. I don't know. But like you, I am glad that he finally decided to say something about it because something needed to be said. Suns win, game and a half back of the Utah Jazz, the Miami Heat tonight. You don't have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. What you need to do is text the word bonus right now to 620-620. Listen for your name this afternoon at 3:35. To win $500. Again, text the word bonus to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus. He has a reputation of being injury prone. But what does James Conner think about having that kind of stigma? You'll hear what the brand new Cardinals running back had to say about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah's with us with today's Twitter Poll question of the day. Good afternoon, Sarah.
And a good afternoon to you, too.
What do you have for us today?
Okay, we are talking about the newest addition to the Cardinals running back room, James Conner, somebody that Gambo has been mentioning for quite some time now as a guy that the Cardinals were interested in. Well, it turns out they were interested in him. 1 year deal for the guy. And so we are asking, with the addition of James Conner, how do you feel about the current state of running backs for the Arizona Cardinals? Okay, so that's a submission, I think. The three options I have for the poll: very happy, looking good, impressed. The second option, I still would like the Cardinals to draft a rookie running back.
Okay.
Or I still would like the Cardinals to add a veteran running back.
Hmm.
I just added a veteran running back.
Do you want another one?
Those are my choices. I would opt for A. I'm satisfied.
I like Chase Edmonds, and they got themselves another running back. So,
unless you feel like they need to draft somebody. Do you feel like they need to draft somebody?
No, not really.
I mean, if they do.
Not even with later picks?
I'm in favor of at some point draft. I don't think they need to do it in the first round. They could draft one later. Yeah,
okay.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, so it's not urgent.
I'm satisfied. Yeah, I'm okay. The running back room looks fine to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Survey says
Cardinals fans are happy too.
Okay.
55% of them went with that first option. I'm happy the running back room looks good. 40% still want the Cardinals to draft a rookie.
That's interesting.
5% want the Cardinals to add another vet. And no surprise here, but every time we ask about the state of running backs and the Cardinals, Eno Benjamin pops up in the responses. A lot of people asking, where the heck is this guy?
Will he
see some time? Of course they do. I completely get it. But I feel like, no disrespect intended, but I forget that he is there until people mention he is there.
I don't even think that he would be the running back currently on the roster who would get the majority of the touches. I think it's Jonathan Ward before him. I mean, if you're talking about running backs who are on the roster that you know, haven't been used a lot, I think Ward's ahead of Eno. Just based off of what happened last year, Ward was the one who was getting those carries and those touches in Week 17, not Eno Benjamin.
Yeah, Eno's a rookie. I'm telling you, I think they like Eno. I wouldn't be surprised if Eno got more touches this year than Ward.
You think so?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I smell a bet. I smell a bet. Smells like a wager. That's the poll question. You can find it
now that the Florida tight end's going number one overall to Jacksonville.
I'll lose that one. Yeah, but you know what? That's only going to cost you.
Pick.
You know what? With those odds I was offering you, I mean, come on. How could you not take that bet? You know, you owe me a lunch. Big
good
deal. Yeah, big deal.
Good odds.
James Conner was introduced today as the newest member of the Cardinals. Why Arizona?
Can I just give you the lunch that the Diamondbacks owe me?
Huh?
Can I just give you the lunch that the Diamondbacks owe me from
So what, the Diamondbacks now owe me a lunch?
Well, you just take the lunch that they owe me.
Okay. How do I get my lunch? That's really all I want to know. Who's buying me lunch? That's all I need to know.
All right.
James Conner, and it hasn't happened yet, so we'll see. James Conner on why the Cardinals. So,
right place, right time. Opportunity to come here and just contribute to something that I believe is on the rise and it's going great. Just the opportunity to come learn from these veterans that are out here, and I just feel like the opportunity, just let go during free agency. This is God's plan for me.
He was kind of the guy all along. Name you had been mentioning. The Sarah alluded to it. You've been mentioning his name for 3 weeks now. They got him on a 1 year, I would imagine, very, very friendly deal, probably somewhere around the veterans minimum when it's all said and done. We haven't seen the contract deal details unless you know them. I like it. I like the move by the Cardinals getting this guy because I keep it in perspective. He's not going to carry the ball 200 times for the Cardinals next year, and that's fine.
You know, out of the University of Pittsburgh, he overcame cancer to get to the NFL. He was the 105th pick in that third round. He played, you know, 4 years with Pittsburgh. He was a Pro Bowl selection. And, you know, and he was a free agent. Pittsburgh wasn't bringing him back, and the Arizona Cardinals liked him. They like him like they liked Mike Davis, you know, maybe not as much, but they like him with that with his ability to run for those tough yards, you know, they really liked. I mean, he's still only 25 years old, doesn't have a tremendous amount of wear and tear on him. So I think that he's, you know, he's a strong back. He's a good back. He's good in pass protection as well, can pick up the blitz. So this is a... You know, he was one of the few remaining free agents that you looked at and say, okay, that guy makes sense. So I kind of had a feeling that this would be the guy that they were going to get after they didn't get Mike Davis. I really focused on Connor and only Connor, and they ended up getting him.
Yeah, 6'1", 233, averages for his career, 4.3 yards per carry, which you'll take in a heartbeat if you're the Cardinals. And again, the concern will be the injuries, right? He's since 2018, you know, 13 games, 10 games, 13 games. I get it, but I think coming in knowing that he's probably not the man. In fact, he was even asked about his fit with Chase Edmonds and how it's going to work.
I think Chase can do it all, and I believe I can do it all. So just bouncing, going back to each other, his decision making, his speed. You know, he runs hard too. He got that dog mentality, just like I got. So we just gonna roll.
Just went on to say, he says he hasn't really discussed his role with the Cardinals.
No, we didn't even get specific. Like I said, the only thing I can guarantee in my role is here is gonna be come here and play hard. That's gonna be my role, lead by actions, and that's all I can do. So all that stuff will take care of itself. You know, I'm just looking forward to getting here to meet my new teammates, meet my coaches. Learning the offense and just going from there. We got to take it one game at a time, one play at a time. And first things first is we got to work.
Well, I mean, you got to like the addition. You just have a veteran running back, right? To not go in with what they have. I think having the veteran running back, the guy that you feel good with the tough yards. Like, I like Ward. Ward runs tough, and he's good in pass protection, too. But James Conner's got more success.
Oh, sure. Sure.
You know, in this league than Ward does. You know, Eno's young. I think he'll get some opportunities. But, you know, this, you know, Chase has battled some injuries. Connor's battled some injuries. So if you're looking for, like, okay, you got to make sure those guys stay healthy. It's hard. It's a tough position to play. Guys get hurt. Connor's availability has been a question mark. And I like Chase, but Chase has missed some games too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this helps Chase in many ways because I don't think you have to have Chase run for those tough yards. You know, when you need a yard or two, I think that you can take some of the pressure off of Chase there.
I'll be really curious to see because it's only been 2 years of Cliff Kingsbury, right? So we don't have we've got 32 games from which to kind of judge him on what he does. For the most part, he's been a clear primary running back, clear secondary running back guy. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. It's been pretty, like, Kenyon Drake was the guy and Chase Edmonds was the second guy. And it was very clear in terms of touches. I wonder if it's going to be as clear with these two or it's going to be more of a 50-50 split or a 60-40 split between these guys. Because it was very obvious previously who the man was and who the man part two was. And I wonder if this is going to be a little different with these two. And the only reason I'm thinking that is what you just said about Chase a second ago. You know, his durability concerns. Can he handle the load of 22, 23, 25 touches per game? And if you're worried at his build that maybe he can't be the man at running back, maybe you'll see more of an honest-to-God split at the position this year than we've ever really seen under Cliff Kingsbury. That's not really how he's done it at running back.
Well, before they ended up getting Kenyon Drake, it was David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. It was DJ. It was David Johnson. But that's when that's the year David Johnson got traded and his rush, he wasn't doing very well. And you go back to look at some of the games and in some of those games, you know, they were starting to phase David Johnson out a little bit. He wasn't getting a lot of carries in those games because he wasn't doing very well. And then they eventually got rid of him and then Drake came in And but there were some really good games for Chase Edmonds, too. Remember that Giants game back in 2019?
Right.
You know, that was the big breakout, one of those big breakout games, I believe, for Chase. So, but it was David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. And but you, there wasn't a clear-cut number one because David Johnson was faltering. He was on his way out.
Not counting Kyler Murray, who had 133 touches, right? 133 attempts rushing the football last year. If you're looking at touches from a season ago, Kenyon Drake had 264 touches. Chase Edmonds had 150. So Kenyon Drake had nearly twice as many touches as Chase Edmonds. I bet this year there's a little bit more of a balance between Chase and Connor than maybe there was between Drake and Edmonds. That's just a guess. I don't know, but maybe it's a little more balanced this year between the two. Just because you might be worried about Chase and that heavy, heavy workload.
Best game of Chase Edmonds' career. He had 27 carries for 126 yards and 3 touchdowns against the Giants. He was very good in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good. 27. And I think I don't know if he caught any balls or not. He caught a couple of balls. So that was 29 touches in that game. I don't think that they want to give him that amount of touches. I think that they, you know, you're bringing in a veteran running back with experience because you're expecting him to. Now, like we said, I mean, you got to run Connor on first and 10 too, right? You got to run Connor on second and 10. You got to run Connor on third and 5. Like, you can't always just, you know, expect Connor's going to come out and run the ball on third and 1 and third and 2.
Yeah.
Because it just, you can't telegraph that to the opponent. You've got to have him out there. I think that, you know, Chase will get 75% of the carries and Connor will get 25-30%.
The tone of the Western Conference and the NBA completely changed last night. How does it impact the Phoenix Suns and what will it mean come playoff time? We'll talk about next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
If you look at the odds that the casinos have done today, yesterday the Nuggets were 10 or 12 to 1 in places. Right now they're 100 to 1. And I don't want to reduce it to a number, but that right there says what this injury means to their chances.
Wow. I didn't realize they took that big of a hit in the eyes of Vegas.
Oh, of course.
They went from 10 or 12 to 1 to 100 to 1?
Yeah, they just lost their...
Oh, I understand that. I mean, I just didn't... I thought it would have gone down to 30 to 1, 40 to 1, 50 to 1, 100 to 1?
I mean, that's your worst fears. Is that your star player goes out like that.
Yeah.
That is absolutely your worst fear right there. It's like something like that happens.
Yeah, what we're talking about, if you missed the news, Jamal Murray with about 50 seconds to go in the Nuggets' loss last night to the Golden State Warriors. It was a 7-point game, 8-point game at the moment with under a minute to go. He was driving the basket, and it appeared to be non-contact. He just kind of planted his leg, and it wasn't a gruesome injury, right? It wasn't the kind that you have to, oh, God, look away, don't look. I mean, but he went down in a heap, and slapped his hand down on the floor, and was gripping at his left knee, and, man, you just knew. You just knew. Tore his ACL.
It was, you had a bunch of players that were standing around him, and he was just, he wouldn't get in the wheelchair. He wanted to be helped off, so he didn't get in the wheelchair. But you can see, and I went back and I watched it in slow-mo as much as I could because I was trying to see when it happened. I think it happened when he made that leap because he never actually tried to finish the shot. He went up, and then he just came down. The ball never went up. It stayed with him and then went down instead of, going up towards the basket. So, I mean, it wasn't on the landing. It was on the takeoff that the knee just went.
Kendrick Perkins on the jump says, with all due respect to the injury, Denver just went from contenders to a first-round exit in the Western Conference.
Now, with Jamal Murray being out, Rachel and Brian, to be honest, it's a first-round exit. They're going to make the playoffs, but they're not getting past the first round. You need that dynamic duo, that Batman and Robin, especially in the Western Conference, to compete with all the duos they have in the West.
Yeah, Brian Windhorst basically echoed how irreplaceable Jamal Murray is.
Monty Morris is a terrific player, and he's one of the best backup point guards in the league. But what you don't, what you can't replace is a guy who, in a 50-50 situation, fourth quarter, game 5, 2-2, who can carry you home. And I know that Nikola Jokic has that ability, but we saw in the playoffs last year that Murray was a special player, a difference-making player. You can't replace that in the playoffs.
They had just 3 weeks ago, they had just traded for Aaron Gordon. 3 weeks ago, they traded Gary Harris Jr. and R.J. Hampton and a first-round pick to go get Aaron Gordon and to go for it this year.
Yeah.
I mean, that just... Again, your worst fears realized. You went all in 3 weeks ago. You got one of the best available guys out there. You started to win a lot of basketball game with him. He's got one more year after this season on his contract. Gordon does. And now, you know, Murray's going to miss that. Because Murray's not only going to miss this year, Murray's going to miss a lot of next year, too.
Of course.
I mean, you're talking about an 11-month recovery, you know, so probably the end of the regular season next year, which he might be able to play at the end of... They might keep him out all the next year because think about when the season starts.
Right, they're going to recalibrate yep. when the season begins and when the season ends. So if it's a year from now, well, typically this is when the season ends in the NBA. This year, season still has a month left to go. I mean, look, obviously from a Suns standpoint, this clears aside one potential real big kind of landmine in their way to winning the Western Conference. It's just hard to feel good about something like that because you think about, man, if you're a Nuggets fan today, you're looking at a basketball team that you thought was one of the best in the NBA, right? That was good enough certainly to win the West. And now you're thinking, are we even going to get out of the first round of the playoffs? You wouldn't wish that on anybody under any circumstances. And yet there is no denying that last night, that helped the Phoenix Suns. I mean, there's just...
You hate it, but that's the truth. I mean, it does because that's... You know, that's one threat that you don't think. I mean, that two-man game. You know, Murray was hitting 40% of his three-pointers this year. I mean, he was shooting 43% since the All-Star break from three-point range. And now you put all the pressure on Jokic. You know, it's going to be very difficult for them. It's going to be very difficult for, you know, not having that, you know, that 1-2 punch anymore and having that guard that could just go off and go crazy and knock down all these threes. It's going to be very difficult for Denver to have success without Murray in the playoffs.
Take a snapshot of this moment. As it stands right now, the Denver Nuggets are the fourth seed in the Western Conference. They have a one-game lead over the Lakers for that spot. They've got a 2.5-game lead over Portland. The Lakers are currently fifth. Portland is currently sixth. We'll see where the Nuggets are a month from right now because there's also the mental side of this. How mentally defeated is Nikola Jokic right now? How mentally defeated is Michael Porter Jr. right now?
I would say that they lose the top four seed. I'll say they lose that. They don't drop as far as seven, so they're not in the play-in game. So I don't think that they drop as far as seven. I think they'll lose some ground, and they could end up sixth.
Okay.
But I don't think they drop to seventh.
Speaking of seventh, the Dallas Mavericks are currently in seventh place right now. And Luka Doncic, last night... Not a fan of the play-in tournament. Quote, I don't understand the idea of a play-in. You play 72 games to get into the playoffs, then maybe you lose two in a row and you're out of the playoffs. I don't see the point of that. Close quote. Convenient, given that his team is the one sitting in that spot.
You know, I said this to you when we were in our show prep meeting. If it was the Suns, we'd feel the same way. Like, the Suns haven't made the playoffs in over a decade, and if you were sitting there and you were like, really? They're good enough to be top eight now, and now they have to go play a play-in game? In order to, like, really get in? Because they, like, I don't count the 7, 8, 9, 10 matchup as really being in. That's me. You know, you win that game and then you get in.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I would be upset if it was, like, if the Suns were the 7th seed right now and they'd have to play a play-in game, I'd be like, oh, God, that's so stupid.
Yeah.
Any other previous year, they're in the playoffs and now they're not.
Yeah, but as long as you win that game, then fine, great, awesome. It's like when the Diamondbacks won that wild card game against the Colorado Rockies. I mean, okay, now we're in. Or when ASU beat, who was it, St. John's to get into March Madness. Okay, now we're officially in, all right? We were kind of in, now we're totally in. I get it. I mean, if the Suns were in the same spot as the Dallas Mavericks and had a comfortable lead for seven, we'd be like, oh, man, seriously, of all the years you're going to pull this play-in tournament crap on us, it's the one year the Suns are going to get the postseason, we would feel that way.
I don't want this to be permanent. I mean, I really don't. Some people may like it, but I'm really hopeful that this is just that this goes away. Now, I think it will. And I'll give you the exact reason why. I mean, go look at 9 and 10 in the Eastern Conference. It's the Pacers who are two games under 500 and the Bulls who are nine games under 500. Those teams don't deserve to have a chance to play in a playoff game.
Right.
They're terrible. And if you look at 9-10 in the West, I mean, the Warriors are two games under 500 and the Spurs are 500. None of the four teams that are going to get a chance to play right now are an over 500 team. None of them. I mean, we're rewarding mediocrity and bad teams. I'm not a fan of it.
Jared Dudley tweeted out, I could very well see us going back to the normal 82-game schedule with no play-in tournaments next season.
Yeah,
and I don't entirely disagree with
that. Yeah, that's what it should be. It should be. Because it's For this year, fine. Next year, go back to normal.
He has caused plenty of frustration for Suns fans so far in his career, but along with his increased consistency and how big he was in the fourth quarter last night, DeAndre Ayton is proving yet again to be a real team player for the Phoenix Suns. And we're not being sarcastic about that. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.